once a month, we have him, Eric Hatch with Hatch Realty in studio, taking all your real estate-related questions, buying, selling, lake property, small town, big town, all of it is on the table, and he provides it all for just having a good time here on Afternoons Live. Eric, I appreciate you coming back in, man. How you been?
Oh, my gosh. It's so perfect out right now. How can you be crabby when my ginger skin is getting a perfectly crisp tan?
Are the sun and you friends?
No,
or
we
have to lather up repeatedly.
We are frenemies. It is a love-hate relationship. I love the shade, but I certainly appreciate there not being snow on the ground. So we'll find a way.
Yeah. This is, I've been telling myself, look, I get it's hot. It's been humid the last few days. I'm not going to complain because April was miserable. You had a long winter. Cherish it while it lasts right now, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, I have
I'm curious.
I have some people here in from out of town. I'm hosting a coaching event. A lot of folks know I run a real estate and business coaching company as well. And so I have folks in from all over the country. One person just got here from Dallas, and so I was connecting with her earlier today. It's 109 degrees in Dallas right now.
Oof.
And they have what appears to be like a 20 or 30 day stretch of above 100. So I'm going to take all this and I'm going to enjoy every moment of it because that's a hard pass for me.
Have you ever, as a host that does these seminars, have you ever booked one of those for people to come here in January?
We have. I love that you asked that question. When we opened up Hatch Coaching, I bought the Johnson Building downtown. So that's where Daly's Market and Mason Jar is. Super cool building downtown. We bought the whole building, and then I'm leasing out part of it for my coaching company. And so we're upstairs, the second floor, right across from the Jasper. Such a great location. Half of our building is office space, and the other half of our office is utilized for events. And so we have a 900 square foot room, this awesome Broadway wall that shows up in pictures all the time. And we're like, we're going to host events every other month. It doesn't matter. We're going to just host events. And so we hosted an event in January. And it was something like 20 below. And so people came from all over the country in North America. And they're like, what in the hell have we gotten ourselves into? this poor guy named Frank from Toronto, Canada, got stuck here an extra 2.5 days. He couldn't get home after he finished our event. And so I don't think he fell in love with Fargo like people get to this summer.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if they want to come here and experience all that we have to have, I want them to experience the absolute worst of it, too, during those cold, cold, long winter months. So I'm glad. Throw them in the deep end. Let them float around for a little bit and get used to it. Good. I was hoping for that answer.
That's right.
Eric Hatch, he takes all your questions at 35270. You send them in. I'll read them. He'll answer them. Or you can call us on the Lady Studio line at 237-5948. It's been a little over a month since you and I've connected. How have things changed in the real estate market since then?
You know, I think the best example that I can give is that things froze and now have melted. And it's happening everywhere as we've come out of the COVID chaos. Folks that don't know and understand, real estate did not get harmed when COVID happened. In fact, the real estate market and realtors' careers accelerated. People bought out of emotional distress and frustration, whether it be retail therapy or their homes now were serving a different purpose. It wasn't just where you lived. It was where you worked. It was where you educated your kids. It was where you worked out. And you stayed there a lot more often. And so people bought in more aggression over the last 2 years than we had seen. But when the Feds adjusted rates, we soon saw interest rates that spiked up from somewhere in the threes to somewhere in the low sixes. Like they practically doubled. And so people just were shell-shocked. They wanted nothing to do with real estate. And so we saw a massive halt to our market. Now what we're seeing is a normalizing of our market, Tyler. There are people coming and saying, I know I'm not getting the best interest rate of what I could have had, but I still need to buy. I still want to buy. People buy out of death and out of life. Loss of a job, loss of a loved one, loss of your health, loss of people moving out of your homes because they're graduating and moving on. or they buy because of life. New kids, new marriage, new relationships, new job, new career, new opportunity. They're buying out of life and death, and that still happens. And so that means real estate will continue on regardless of the economic conditions. And the real estate market right now is still under the average. The average interest rate for the history of the country the last 100 or so years is about 6%. And right now, interest rates for a 30-year conventional mortgage are still under 6%. And so we're still in a sweet spot. We're still in a healthy place. But if you just look back at what it was 5 months ago, yeah, you're a little bit frustrated. But eventually, life and death will happen. And I think you're still going to make your move.
When it comes to the range of it within this market, meaning the range of the price of the home, is it still that first-time home buyer, I guess, is the price range or the way I'll describe it, that's still the hot market? I ask this because there's a couple of houses that that are probably in that next step. When you say that life goes on and people have new opportunities, so that next step, you've lived in a home, you sell it, you go to the next one. I've seen the houses that I would in my mind put in that category, that next step, that are still out there, they're still for sale. Is it still that first time, that early entry house that's still hot to find right now?
So let's talk numbers. Let's talk statistics. The average sales price in the Fargo-Moorhead metro area right now, year to date, is just under $300,000. About $295,000 is the last number I remember seeing. And so that is substantially higher than it ever has been. However, that is not inordinately out of reach for some people. The first-time home buyers realistically are probably looking at homes 250 and under. Kind of that 175 to 250 is what I'd probably classify as our first-time home buyer market. Certainly, if you're a doctor and it's the first home you're buying, you're buying something with a little more pizzazz and a little more space and dollars to it. But if somebody's buying and purchasing a first-time home, what we see at that 250 and under range is we see a lot of twin homes. We see a lot of homes that are smaller single family properties. We can see some condos, that sort. And those homes traditionally maybe lack a little bit of curb appeal in terms of like they're not unique to themselves. There's a lot of homes in the area that will look similar. But what you're getting is usually you're trying to maximize your square footage. The lots may be a little bit smaller. And that's that kind of home right now, Tyler. That home is still flying off the shelves. That home is still in massive, massive demand. The average age of people in the Fargo-Moorhead Metro is 31 years old. This is a young community.
What?
31 years old. Yeah,
31?
Google it. Check the old internet, my friend. Yeah. I double checked this. I double checked this last week, and I believe it was 30.95 or 31. It's right there. That's the average age of people. So this is a young community, and a lot of people are buying. Think about NDSU and Concordia and MSUM and the other smaller two-year colleges. We have at any given time 20,000 kids. I mean, 18 to 22 years old that are here, and a lot of them look to stay. So we are producing young people. So that first-time home buyer range, that is without a doubt, that is the hottest. Now, this move-up market, this second home market, now we're talking 250 to probably 500, and that's a large range, but now you're starting to get bigger lots, bigger houses, maybe a little more unique design, and that market, I'm not going to say it's soft because it's not soft, but it is not as rigid as what we have in the first-time home buyer market. And then the next echelon is really 500 to a million, and then I'd say north of a million. And there's not a ton of houses that hit the market that are north of a million, but there's a ton of houses that are getting built right now that are north of a million. So if you don't believe me, go and drive in Rivers Bend, the development behind Costco, and take a look at some of the properties that are getting built. Like, there's some hubba, look at that. Like, when my wife and I are at Costco, she's like, hey, can we go look at some houses over there?
I know.
They're unbelievable. Unreal. There's some beautiful, beautiful properties.
I know, and it leads to the question, what is everybody doing for it to make a living in this community, especially if the average age is 30 years old? But
Tyler, there's a lot of wealth in this community. There is from agriculture that has provided a lot of resources to the oil boom that's provided resources to realistically people living within their means and compounding family businesses. And this is an entrepreneurial's playground here. You want to guess who owns the majority of those houses? It's entrepreneurs. It's people who have risked big, stressed a lot, and now they're reaping the benefits.
You know, it's interesting because I think you go belly up any place and you're having a conversation. Geez, you drive by this house, people are going to say, well, yeah, well, it's got to be a doctor at one of the hospitals, somebody from Microsoft. Those are like the two places that I always get brought up. And I always bring up, well, agriculture as well. But, yeah, entrepreneurship. I mean, there's a lot of small business owners that have made a lot of great, you know, business startups work mm-hmm. by taking that risk. And you know what? Good for them. Build mm-hmm. that house. Make me gawk at it and say, oh, my word, when I drive by.
Yeah.
Questions coming in at 35270. Eric, I'll come back to this. I got to take a quick pause here. But one asking about lakeshore properties. Also, we talk about those stages in life. I saw a study earlier today on our national affiliate, CBS. It says one in four young adults live with a parent or other older family member. Hmm. If this is a young community you just talk about, this is the people we're discussing. Welcome back. It's Keeping It Real with Eric Hatch. He's in studio. You send him in. I read him. He answers them at 35270. Coming back with Eric Hatch right after this.
Father wears his Sunday best. Mother's tired. She needs a rest. The kids are playing up there.
It's Keeping It Real with Eric Hatch. And you know what? I've got questions, but he takes yours first. And to do that, you text to 35270, and I'll read them. Tyler, can you ask Eric, do lakeshore properties require as much staging as non-lakeshore properties?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I'll be honest. Maybe. you heard it here first, everybody. The answer is maybe.
Perhaps.
Here's what I can tell you, because I understand the layers and the context of the question. In a house in town, the thing that matters more than anything is traditionally the inside of the house. The location matters, the lot matters, but the inside of the house is where people do most of their living. And when it comes to lakeshore property, the thing that matters most is not the interior of the house, and it is instead the exterior. It's the front footage that you have. It's the size of the lot. It's the grade of the lot that you have. Those are the things that matter more. So if I were to compare apples to apples, I would simply say, yeah, it matters less. But that doesn't mean it doesn't matter when it comes to staging a home. So many people, when they're buying a lake property, certainly want the location and they want the right lot, but they also want the house to match. Unless it's going to, like, I see teardowns that happen in lakes country more than I do anywhere else. I'm on Lake Sally, and there's a lot that I saw. It's a 50-foot lot, close to shore, close to other houses, and lake frontage there is $8,000 to $10,000 a front foot. That's how you actually measure the value of lake area, is traditionally the front footage that you have. The house value is secondary to the front footage that's there. And so the person who purchased that, they bought the house for, I don't know, I'm guessing $350,000 to $400,000. They tore it down and then they built anew. So now they're in probably close to $1 million on the place. But I can't confidently say that it's worth $1 million, staged or not, because the value of lake properties traditionally are most related to the front footage that you have. Certainly, if you have a show house or showpiece that will increase the value, you should look to stage your property. But if you have a rundown place, putting nice furniture in a rundown place doesn't necessarily help to sell the house. It's gonna paint the picture that this could be nice, but the actual structure of the property is going to matter more than the staging. But staging is still important.
The figures you just threw out there had, my heart was pulsing a little bit. Holy cow. Yeah. And I get it. I mean, it's lakefront property. That's what the people, that's one of those factors. We talk about life and how it develops. That's one of some people's goals is, you know what, at some point I want to be able to have a lake home.
The prices of lakefront property are outrageous right now. There's, I think, three premier lakes in the Detroit Lakes area. There's a lot of really great lakes, but the three largest, the most popular, would be Big Cormorant, Pelican, and Big Detroit. Those three lakes are $12,000 to $15,000 a front foot, depending on the property. Just let that sink in. You have a 50-foot lot, which is not a big lot. That can go for upwards of $750,000 with a shabby property on it. Shocking. Crazy.
Let that sink in, folks. Let that just settle in, absorb it.
I'm doing a great job of selling real estate today, aren't I?
Boy, just telling the facts. That's why we appreciate you coming on. Tyler, could you ask Eric, do you still do open houses?
So when COVID first came upon us, open houses were completely shut down, right? People weren't going out, especially going into strangers' homes. And then North Dakota was more laxed on it than other parts of the country. There were places like California that didn't allow open houses or even showings with clients in it. Things were virtual for a little while, too. And so that elongated itself. But ultimately, what we found out is that open houses started to happen, and they happened more often. And now in Fargo, as our market is more normalizing, we're seeing open houses happen more and more frequently.
Very good. See, it's that simple. You send in a question you've got about real estate, and he'll answer them for you. You got another half hour. He's yours. His name is Eric Hatch, Hatch Realty. You can go check it out there, or you can text in, call in this final half hour. You got it locked into KFGO Fargo. Stick around. Come take me home. Once a month, Keeping It Real with Eric Hatch takes over this afternoon's live with me, your host, Tyler Axis, for the 4 o'clock hour, and that's what's going on today. If you're just joining us, you have a question about buying, selling, whatever it is that involves real estate at 35270. I see some of those questions that are there. I'll ask him when we come back right after the CBS National News. Stick around. Eric Hatch is in the KFGO studio because it's Keeping It Real with Eric Hatch. It is a Wednesday. That is July 20th. Taking all your questions at 35270. Eric, I'm going to go right back to that text club. Is replacing garage doors a good return on investment when selling?
Shockingly, yes. Garage doors and front doors tend to give you, at least according to the internet, because I've researched this and I've had the privilege to be a part of over 6,000 transactions, that exterior pop can be really nice. Now, you have to understand, if you have a functional, fine garage door that's aesthetically not a pain to look at, and then you go and put in a very expensive door, that's not going to be a great return on investment. Now, if you have something that's a little bit dilapidated or something that could use some increase in curb appeal, spending some money and some time on that can be advantageous. Now, there are a couple of hacks, though, that you can do. One of the hacks is to consider painting your garage, and it's not the typical paint that you'd use to paint walls, so understand you're painting oftentimes aluminum or metal, so you have to approach that differently. But you can also actually get stickers for your garage that make it look as though you have windows. And that make it look as though you have like these hinges and like a big sliding barn door. You can give that aesthetic look while keeping your garage door practically the same. You just fake it, you know. And in fact, I have a team member who lives in Rose Creek, and he has a fake it door. And it wasn't until probably the fifth or sixth time I went to his house that I'm like, hey, your door's just one of those aluminum regular doors, and it looks pretty awesome. He's like, yeah, man, we just put some stickers on there. So. Good on him.
I've seen the hinges. I've seen the barn door like handles. If I walk into that garage and I see, oh, there's no window here, then I'm asking questions.
Yeah, you're right, though. It's like the tuxedo T-shirt of decorating your house is what it is.
It's party in the front, right? But because you're driving, you know, by and you see that, and yeah, your eyes go to that, whether you realize it or not. You notice doors. There's a reason why you have, you know, front doors, not garage doors, that pop. You got that bright color, they pop, and it gets your attention out there, and it looks pretty damn fly, I would say. Thanks for sending that in to 35270. It is surprising when you're in that selling process, some of the projects you think, I've got to do this because it's going to get a return on, and then to find out, you know what, I probably didn't need to do this. What are some of those common projects that when you're selling, Eric, you got to – you're the agent for somebody like, should I do this? What's the most common one that you usually get?
That is such a good question. And here's the unfortunate piece is sometimes you're damned if you do and damned if you don't. Let's use flooring and carpet and tile as an example. You may look at it and be like, ugh, I hate what this is. And so you go and you spend a few thousand dollars to put in some new flooring. But the next buyer might also hate what you chose. The move that you have to do is you have to make sure that you're really careful with your choices. Neutral is best. I always tell people that if you can neutralize your house and then you put in pops of color in terms of an accent wall or things that are on your countertop or pillows, furniture, that sort, let that be the pop and don't let the purple walls be the pop. Like, a purple wall is okay, Tyler, but a bunch of purple walls, you're digging yourself into a corner. So the two most common things that I see people change when it does come time to sell is it's about the flooring and it's about the paint. And going neutral matters a lot on both of those. Flooring is what people actually look at first when they walk into a house. They don't look around at the ambiance. They look to see where their path is. And so looking down, if you have anything that's worn or anything that's dated, that can hinder you. Now, I wouldn't go and put in the most expensive flooring because you may be spending more money than what the person's wanting, because a flooring is a personal preference and paint is that same thing. Paint, although inexpensive, should still usually be done by a professional unless you have a massively straight eye and steady hand. And most people really don't. And that can actually hurt you in the long run.
Yep, that's why I have been told that I'm not painting when that is a chore that needs to be done in our household. And I do not put up a fight, so go right ahead. Right. Let's get to the phone lines. You can join that conversation at 237-5948. Let's start off with Russell, who's called in. Russell, you're on with Eric Cash. Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Say, I have a question for you, Mr. Hatch.
You bet.
Is that, you know, I'm over 55. I'll be 64 in October, and my wife's 59. And what is the average price to get into these 55 and older homes? Is there a certain price?
So what we see traditionally in homes that are in communities that are 55 plus is you immediately have less options. There's not a plethora of those communities, but what we have are there's some condo buildings, there's some units available. You can get into something under $200,000 in certain areas of town. That would be in a condo. Anything that is maybe more than, I'll say, 12 to 1,300 square feet, you're now stepping foot into that next price range, and that's going to be probably $200,000 to $400,000 is that next price range that you're going to have. And you have a few more options in that range. I see some twin homes. I see some people that are in a slab-on-grade communities. That's certainly opportunistic. And then I am aware of a couple of communities that are higher end, north of $400,000 or $500,000, that are 55-plus. So you do have an array of options, but you have those different categories of options, sir, but you also have very limited opportunity in each of those. So what's going to be important is that you get in alignment with a realtor that can be on the hunt for you, because when these come up on the market, they tend to go off the market very quickly as well. So you need to jump while the getting's good.
Is there a certain, like, you can only make so much a year, or how does that work?
Yeah, so a 55-plus community is not controlled by the money that you make, or it's only controlled by the primary residence in the house. And so if you, as you said, will be, I think it was 64 in October, happy early birthday to you. If you're above that age of 55, you and your wife automatically qualify.
Because my question is this, is that our house has been paid off for 10 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that if you made a certain amount of money, you didn't qualify.
So that would be true when you're dealing with things like Medicare and Medicaid and other certain rules that say when you can get some assistance. But if it comes to living in a 55-plus community, the only restriction that's there is your age.
And most of these places, I'm sorry, most of these places you have to pay, say, what, $200, $300 a month for, you know, upkeep?
Sure. So you're referring to HOA fees. That's homeowner association fees. And so that oftentimes covers the insurance for the exterior of the house. the lawn care and the snow removal. And so those range in price depending on the size of the property. Also, if you're in a condo unit, there is the maintenance of the hallways and the common areas. But I'd say $150 to $300 is a pretty fair estimate of where you can expect that to be for HOA fees monthly.
Very good, Russell. Appreciate the phone call. Let's move on down to Scott, who's also called in. Scott, you're on with Eric Hatch.
Hi, Eric. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. See, my wife's father had passed away, and, well, we're going to have the home here eventually after the lawyer quits being Yosemite Sam. But is it a good idea to like, get a home inspection first before we even put it on to get rid of or fix everything? And or I'm kind of shooting at the hip here, but...
Yeah,
no, what do we have to do?
Scott, you're asking a really great question, and my sympathies to you and your wife for your loss. But I will share with you that when it comes to trying to figure out a plan, the best, freest, cheapest move is to give a realtor a call. Of course, we at Hatch Realty would love that opportunity. But you give us a call, explain the situation, and what happens in that situation there, Scott, is we walk through and we say, boy, I'm a little bit nervous about this foundation or this HVAC system seems to be dated. And we will guide you to say maybe a home inspection is the right move. Maybe you can just put it right on the market. We have options that you can sell direct to an investor. So it never has to go on the market if it is a headache for you for the projects or the time involved or anything else. And so you have options when it comes to working with Hatch Realty. You'll have some options out there in the industry too. There's some great realtors, but you need to first make a call to a realtor and get set up to understand the analysis that you have. Because each property is unique, but I will tell you this, that I don't think you're going to need a home inspection right away. Usually a buyer will do that due diligence, or the seller will simply, in your situation, even though you've inherited the property, you disclose everything that you know, and then the buyer needs to do their due diligence.
Okay, so there's no other legalities a person really has to look at besides what a lawyer could do?
Well, the lawyer will get you through so that you can have full ownership of the property. And once you have that, once you have the trust and the will and all those things worked out and you are able to have the deed to the house or the mortgage to the house, it's yours to do with as you'd like. So if you want to hang on to it, if you want to sell it, if you want to keep it as a rental, those are all your options. And the realtor that you connect you with, we only get paid when the property sells. A lawyer is going to charge you an hourly fee regardless of if it sells or not. So we certainly aren't lawyers and we don't pretend to be them. But when it comes to real estate transactions, we can give you a lot of good guidance from our past experiences.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, check those guys out or you and go from there.
Perfect. Thanks, Scott.
Scott, thanks for the phone call there. Very good questions coming in from Russell and Scott. There's more in the text club, but I got to get you all caught up with the weather outside. Too Tall Tom Szymanski, our chief meteorologist, will let you know about the rest of this week. We'll come back and wrap up Keeping It Real with Eric Hatch live in the KFGO studio. This is Afternoons Live as well here on KFGO. Times have changed and I have only got a couple of minutes left with Eric Hatch, Keeping It Real once a month here on KFGO. And Eric, I'm going to go to the text club here because somebody's wanting me to ask you if a property on Little Detroit is the same price as the property on Big Detroit, all things equal.
So my Lakes area representative that's on our team, her name's Ashley Hansen. She lives on Little Detroit. So I actually, on my pontoon 2 weeks ago, I had this conversation with her. And here's what she said. No, Little Detroit is less expensive than Big Detroit. Big Detroit has the allure. It has the really large properties, and those things certainly run up the price. Little Pelican has still massive appeal. It's kind of the same water, right? But because it has a little bit less allure, it comes at a more reasonable price.
Very good. There's your answer for you. Eric Hatch, where can people find you? What's the final word that you want to get out to this month before we tie off and get back together again next month?
Well, what I want to always encourage people to do is that you can work with realtors and it doesn't cost you a penny until it actually comes time to close. And so if you are thinking, you know what, investing might be the thing. And we were talking in studio here at the break of how investing in real estate and using it as a cash forward movement makes so much sense. And I can spin for you the logic of the argument. And the logic of the argument is when you own a home, you have an appreciating asset. That's, number one. Number two is when you're paying down your mortgage. It's like a savings account for you. So those are all really positives. But the number three is there's also massive tax advantages when it comes to owning a property. So I can spend all the logic I want, but real estate is an emotional decision. And the best way to get through an emotional decision is with somebody who is an experienced guide to get you through that. Us realtors spend a lot of time making sure that we're understanding the emotional weight that goes with buying and selling houses. So if you're an investor, if you want to use real estate as a cash forward investment, if you want to buy, if you want to sell, the first free move you can do is to talk to a realtor. And that came from our conversation at the last segment with Scott. Also, is that if he has questions of what to do, there's no harm in calling. There's no harm in exploring. We want to make sure that you get the right fit and you get all the answers you can find out there. So people, if you're buying or selling, the first move, the only move you should do is to contact your favorite realtor. We, of course, want an opportunity to earn the job and to interview with you. So if we have that chance, you can contact us at 701-369-4839, or you simply go to hatchrealty.com. You can look at houses. You can meet the team. You can get connected. It's your one-stop shop. It's the storefront you've been waiting for all your life.
Eric Hatch, my friend, so I was going to keep up with you once a month. Well, I tell you what, let's do it again next month, all right?
It's a date. I can't wait.
Can you believe it's going to be August next month already?
My wife is a teacher, and I won't bring that up to her. Yes. Yeah, I gotta stay safe, buddy. Well,
a very smart man, see? He answers your real estate questions, and he's got common sense. Eric, I'm going to let you go. It's always fun, though. I appreciate it. We'll do it again in August.
Yeah. Thanks, Tyler.
For all the people that... You do the same. All the people that text in, called in, thank you. You're the reason why we do this once a month, because you got questions, he's got answers.